You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome to tonight's live broadcast of TPC this Saturday evening. September the 21st, we have a monster show for you tonight. We are going to break rank from our normal template, which features a guest in the second hour. We're going to have a guest in the second hour. We're also going to have one of the first and third as a result of the circumstances of the timing of a couple of issues. So when we were planning tonight's broadcast, we wanted Roger Devlin to be the centerpiece of tonight's show, the anchor for the guest slot. And he's going to be talking to us about a great article he wrote for VDare.com entitled "The Devil's Term for the Dispossession of Americans." And we're going to be talking about what that devil's term is and why it was invented and how it's applied. That's going to be a great hour with Roger Devlin. But since then, it seems as though the rhetoric with regard to Iran has only been sharpening in the wake of John Bolton's resignation. So that was quite interesting. So to help us make sense of that, we're going to have Mark Weber on to talk about the ongoing situation in the Middle East. Always seems to be something ongoing out there, that's for sure. But we're going to get Mark Weber's insights on what's going on with Iran here in the first hour, right after this opening segment. And then in the third hour, back-to-back appearances for Paul Fromm. So Paul was on with us last week to talk about the upcoming Canadian federal elections, really enlightening a couple of segments there where he filled us in on what's going on up there in their country's political scene. But since then, we've had another brown face. I thought it was blackface, but it was brown face, a brown face controversy with Justin Trudeau, a cuck's cuck if there ever was one. No man has emasculated himself more, but he finds himself apologizing still. Justin Trudeau, we're going to get an update on what's going on up there. So Mark Weber, Roger Devlin, and Paul Fromm. I'm James Edwards. They're all coming up tonight. Keith Alexander's back in the studio with me. We missed you the last couple of weeks, Keith. Of course, 2 weeks ago, we were out of town. And then last week, Ole Miss was playing. Thank God their game today was a morning game, so you're able to come back into the studio. And let me tell you something, folks, you got here not 5 minutes ago, but it was a heck of a game today.
Yeah, got in, rolled in on two wheels. I mean, skidding in here, but did the best I could, and we got in, and everything's A-okay. I tell you what, except Ole Miss seems to have a real penchant for losing close games now. It was really an incredible game. I'll have to tell you about it sometime when we have nothing more important to say, and we have a lot of important things to say today.
Well, we do, and a lot of important guests as well. So those are the topics. Those are the guests. We like to use this opening segment to set you up, so to speak. And that's another thing about our guest rotation. I made mention of this. I don't know if it was last week or a couple of weeks ago. I mean, we still bring on new faces, new talent, new people that are out there doing good work. But I really like, over these long years in this business, we have cultivated a nice rotation of guests who I think represent the very best that our cause has to offer when it comes to their areas of expertise and their niche topics. And you couldn't do this work if it felt like work. And I really look forward and enjoy being able to have conversations with this rotation of about 40 or so guests that we feature each year, and a few new faces inserted as well. But, Mark Weber, Roger Devlin, Paul Fromm, I mean, these are mainstays. These are stalwarts. These are the people that when you tune into the political cesspool, these are going to be the kind of guys we bring you.
These are people that have devoted their lives to the cause, folks, and they deserve much more publicity and much more of an audience than they get, but we always want to provide them with one here at the political cesspool.
Well, I made mention of some of the mailbag in last week's first hour. We're always getting so many nice cards and letters and handwritten notes and all of that. Well, I made mention very briefly last week that a fine lady named Nancy up in Kentucky sent me pictures I had never seen before. A little note she sent: James, I thought you might like to have these photos of yourself taken at a speaking engagement. And these are pictures here. There's myself with Bill Rowland. Here's Paul Fromm, the one and only Paul Fromm, back from 2010, just to go to show that we have been working with these people for a long, long time. Sam Dixon. And well, these are just great candid pictures that I didn't even know had been taken of me. It's much less had I seen. And then they come in the mail this week, so that's fantastic. Thank you again, Nancy, for that. And of course, as you know, folks, we're in the midst of our very important third quarter fundraising drive. We are beginning to rally. A lot of people have come on board. I was thinking a few days ago that perhaps the good Lord had raptured our donors and left me and Keith behind. But no, you're still here, and we've had a great week, and we need one more good week to round out the month. Picked up, in addition to our very regular contributors, we picked up a new contributor down in Florida. And he writes, "Dear Mr. Edwards, I am responding to your request for funds. I enjoy your show and appreciate what you do for the Southern people. Thank you." And that comes from Biscuit down in Florida for the contribution. And you're going to be getting that CD that we're offering, a couple of interviews we've done on this show with Pat Buchanan. So thank you for that. And thank you for everyone else. Rob in Virginia, Gene down in Metairie, Louisiana, who sent in some nice letters. And we're going to be writing y'all back as well. Glenn in Maryland, we read them all, and we will respond to them as soon as you can, as soon as we can, and they do mean so much. So, Keith, it's, again, great to have you back. Before, I mean, this is it for me and you tonight. This is the only segment, the only few minutes we have just to ourselves. So, quick thing on what you've been up to the last couple of weeks, any observations, anything you think of importance that should be imparted upon the audience before we get to Mark, Roger, and Paul in kind?
Well, I've been thinking about, you know, various topics. Been taking advantage of the time off to do some deep reading, and hopefully it's going to bear fruit later on this year. We'll have maybe some articles or some conversations on the show about what I've been thinking about. But it's really, I know you've been very busy going on various speaking engagements and whatnot, but we're all looking forward to having a very fruitful and good, filled with information, fall coming up. Fall is right here on our doorstep now. Time marches on.
It's what they keep telling me. It's still hot. It's still 100 degrees almost in
And meanwhile, we have to keep the bills
October.
Paid and bread on the table. You've got a family to raise. Mine is already raised, but I'm you know, still have to be called into duty to help every once in a while.
That's right. I don't guess you ever, as a father, you ever outgrow those obligations. They just kind of change and evolve over time. But you know a little bit more about that than I do. But no, it is great to have you back tonight, Keith. And I think we've got a great show for the audience. What else in terms of announcements before we get to these guys? A lot of important things going on out there. Not a lot of interesting news stateside, though. I haven't seen, you know, normally we can fill a show very easily with content and fodder. I mean, I saw where, one of these organizations declared white nationalism, terrorism to be, you know, the greatest threat to mankind. I think there's been like five white guys that got out of hand in the last decade.
Well, I think it's Trump derangement syndrome, but Trump or something is causing the left to really come out of the closet with their anti-white agenda. It's becoming more and more, you know, right at center stage on everything that's being done. And there's no doubting it anymore.
Hang on right there, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to get the party started with Mark Weber when we come back. Our first of three fantastic guests coming your way this evening. We'll be right back.
Hey, listen up. This is a deep state alert. Former Texas Congressman Steve Stockman, who moved to arrest Lois Lerner for contempt of Congress, has been imprisoned by the very office that Lerner led. You heard right. Stockman hit the Obama administration hard, and they hit back with the full force of the federal government. The guy who said he wanted Mark Levin as Speaker of the House was the first to threaten Obama's impeachment, exposed Hillary selling steel to the Iranians, and blocked both Obama's immigration and gun bills from even reaching the House. But Obama holdovers came after him in federal court with trumped up charges and have locked our guy up. Like many others, he was on Obama's hit list. Steve fought for us in Congress. Now we need to fight for him. Don't abandon this wounded hero on the battlefield. Let's help cover his massive legal costs. To chip in $5 or more, text the word FIGHT to 444-999. That's FIGHT, F-I-G-H-T, to 444-999, or go to defendapatriot.com. That's defendapatriot.com.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, folks. Well, without further ado, let's get to the first of three fantastic guests that we have lined up for your education and your entertainment tonight. The first being the one and only Mark Weber. He is the director of the Institute for Historical Review. We're bringing him on tonight primarily to talk about the rhetoric that seems to be sharpening with regards to America's position and intents towards Iran. So, Mark, welcome back. Bolton is out. O'Brien is in. And the new boss seems to be the same as the old boss.
Thank you very much, James. It's a pleasure, as always, to be with you. Thank you for the invitation. I'm glad to be here.
Well, very welcome and most deserved. So what do we have? You know, when Bolton was on the way out, it looked like, well, perhaps this would give Trump an opportunity to correct a mistake. And we don't know a whole lot about O'Brien. I mean, he's certainly not a household name as some of these other people in the administration have been. But it certainly doesn't look as though things are going to change too much. Or am I wrong about that?
Well, I don't think things will change too much because what's been happening, not just with Bolton, but since the Trump administration took office, has been a very hostile campaign against Iran. And it began when Trump announced, not long after he came into the White House, that the United States was withdrawing from the 2015 international Iran nuclear deal. And since then, Trump has back this up with a unprecedented, as he calls it, unprecedented level of economic sanctions, you might say economic warfare against Iran to try to force it to back down. And this has failed. Iran is not backing down. Iran has important allies and important partners in the world, including China and Russia. And the United States, by contrast, has almost no friends except Saudi Arabia and Israel. And that's not much to go on. Now, it was 1 week ago that some drones attacked Iranian oil refineries, and that has escalated the whole conflict. And since then, there's been a great deal of discussion and rhetoric about trying to retaliate. But I think the important thing for Americans is to remember that this is not a war in which there's any essential American interest at stake. A conflict between Iran and Saudi Arabia is not one that the United States should be getting involved with any more than Argentina or Japan should be involved in it, or Europe. It's not our conflict. And very often, too often in our history, Americans have been brought into conflicts that are played up in the media and told they're very important, in which there's really no essential American interest involved. And in, as our founding fathers made clear at the very beginning of the history of the United States and made clear for many, many years afterwards, we should stay out of conflicts in which there's no essential American interest at stake.
Mark, this is Keith Alexander. You're, of course, referring to at least partially to George Washington's farewell address, in which he advised Americans that the surest way to lose their freedom and their republic was foreign entanglements, fighting foreign wars, and having favorite nation status for any foreign nation. We seem to have varied or veered far away from that North Star principle that was part of our founding. Now, regarding Iran, what are we doing to prevent Iran from selling its oil to the rest of the world? I'm really not very clear about that, but I think that must be key to the sanctions.
Yes. Well, the international agreement made in 2015 by not just the United States and Iran, but also Britain, France, Germany, China, and Russia, was that in return for a lifting of sanctions, and in fact a requirement that all countries in good faith try to encourage trade with Iran, Iran pledged to agree to very strict international inspections so that it would not build nuclear weapons. Iran has abided by this, at least until recently, but very soon the Trump administration pulled out of the agreement, which it actually is not entitled to do, but for reasons I'll go into in a minute. But anyway, the United States announced it was pulling out of the agreement and instead has imposed sanctions not only on countries but even companies that trade with Iran. Now, what that means is the United States puts itself in a very peculiar and, I think, untenable international position. It says we're going to punish countries that abide by international law, and we're going to ourselves break international law, because a United Nations, this Iran agreement is a United Nations Security Council resolution. That means it's binding on all member states, including the United States. The United States doesn't have the right under international law just to pull out, because any more than Security Council resolutions, as the United States has over and over stated, have the force. They're binding. They're the United States is required to uphold them, and that's why in the world there's virtually no support for U.S. policy toward Iran. And so America has imposed sanctions not just against Iran, but against countries and companies that do business with Iran in keeping with international law and in keeping with the 2015 Iran nuclear deal.
Well, what does the United Nations have to say about America's actions regarding Iran? Anything?
Overwhelmingly, the countries of the world condemn not only the United States, but Israel and Saudi Arabia for their actions in the Middle East. That's one of the reasons why Trump is very reluctant to go to war, because there's no real support for this, not in Europe, not in Asia, not anywhere, except, as I mentioned, in Saudi Arabia and Israel. And that's,
yeah, well, it's interesting what you just – go ahead, Mark. I'm sorry.
Well, and also there's no – it's also illegal by under American law, because, you know, this would be going to war with no sanction by the Congress. As anyone who knows the U.S. Constitution knows, the Founding Fathers made very clear that the only branch of the government that has the right to send the United States to war, except I suppose in the case of immediate threat, is the Congress. And there's no stomach in Congress, and there's none for the American people. Polls show overwhelmingly the American public is opposed to another war. We've had our belly full of these, in Iraq and in Afghanistan. And most Americans want to get out of these conflicts. They don't want a new one. And also, I think...
What about Israel? You know, Netanyahu seems to be having trouble putting together a coalition government. Does this, is this a factor in that, or is that a totally unrelated matter?
Yes, no, it's a factor because Israel has a long-term interest in trying to bring down every regime in the region, every government in the region that is not subordinate to or plays ball with Israel. Iran is fervently, principally, categorically opposed to Israel's policies in Palestine and in the Middle East. It sees this as essential to its very nature as a Muslim and as an Iranian country. And Iran, Netanyahu has for years urged every measure by the United States to try to bring down the Islamic Republic, just as Netanyahu and or his predecessor pushed the United States for war against Saddam Hussein in Iraq as well. And this is nothing new. This is the Israeli interest in it. And Netanyahu, of course, is fighting for his life. But that's not – the Israeli policy will not essentially change whether Netanyahu's in office or not. This doesn't depend on a Netanyahu or a Bolton or a Pompeo. These are very deep-rooted factors in U.S. and Israeli policy that were true even when Obama was president, for example.
Well, is this the clean break memorandum of 1995 coming to a consummation? It seems like the only nations that they have not been able to affect regime change in are Syria and Iran. And they've tried for years now to get Bashar al-Assad out of Syria. And are they now trying to do this to Iran?
Well, hold on right there, Mark. We are coming up on a break. Good question. Great content this segment. This is Real Radio, and this is a real discussion on a very important geopolitical issue, the likes of which you won't hear in the establishment press. But thankfully, we have Mark Weber, and we have this broadcast, and we're making good use of both. We'll be right back.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
A Chicago police officer is in stable condition after being shot Saturday morning on the south side of town. The suspected shooter is believed to be the fugitive Michael Blackman, who was responsible for another shooting that happened last week. Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot on the bravery of her city's officers.
We were reminded of the sacrifice our officers make to protect the residents in the city that we love.
President Trump has decided to deploy additional support of hundreds of military troops to Saudi Arabia and the UAE in response to Iran's alleged attack on a Saudi oil facility. State Department spokesman Morgan Ortegas on the administration's decision.
What you're seeing is for the first time in 40 years, there is an administration that is telling the Islamic Republic of Iran, is telling that regime, no, you will not behave this way. And that's why we see they're acting out, because the maximum pressure campaign is working.
This is USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Wayne Alaruth, the capitalist evangelist. I'm here to introduce you to a special company with the potential to be one of the great all-American stories. Fortum Resources is a publicly traded, diversified natural resource company with oil, gas, and mining properties in North America and internationally. Fortum is led by Chairman Mark Bruner, the legendary oil man who built Ultra Petroleum from a 15-cent stock to $200 per share, creating $15 billion in shareholder profits. Mark has 30 years of experience in the oil and gas industry, overseeing contracts with Halliburton, ExxonMobil, and Hess. Fortum has over 350,000 acres of oil and gas resources, and more than half the acreage has been evaluated by world-renowned auditors Deloitte Touche. Fortum also owns the rights to the 180-square-mile City of Gold mining property. Fortum is traded on two global exchanges, U.S. ticker symbol FTMR. Repeat, FTMR. This is a rare ground floor opportunity to capitalize on a proven energy industry legend. Please visit FortumResources.com. That's Fortum, F-O-R-T-E-M, Resources.com.
Senator Cory Booker's 2020 presidential campaign is struggling. The New Jersey Democrat is in Des Moines, Iowa today when asked about his urgent fundraising appeal by his campaign.
We have done more with less than the top four really much better finance campaigns. But the fourth quarter is when you got to grow. Grow or get out.
A new report reveals the cleanliness of airline water. With the details, here's USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes.
Researchers at the City University of New York found only Alaska Airlines, Allegiant Air, and Hawaiian Airlines have water that meets federal aircraft water quality standards. The study focusing on water that was used to make coffee and tea and in bathroom sinks. The study authors recommend if you're not on one of those three airlines, drink only sealed bottled water, avoid airline coffee and tea, and use hand sanitizer rather than washing your hands in the plane's bathroom.
This is USA Radio News.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
And welcome back indeed, as some of our astute listeners have picked up on. I'm still battling a cold for the second straight week. I guess you have to actually have some rest to beat a cold, or else it just continues to nag you, and there is no rest for the weary. Thankfully, we have Keith in the studio tonight, and he's picking up some of the slack in these interviews. But, of course, you don't have to do much work when you have a guy like Mark Weber on. Every time Mark's on, I know it's going to be a fantastic show, informative, and he's going to come in well-prepared, and we're not going to have to worry about it. And that's certainly what we've heard so far tonight. Mark, you made mention of the fact that, constitutionally speaking, America is not supposed to go to war unless Congress declares war. Of course, Congress hadn't declared war since the Second World War, and even then it was only against Japan, and that, of course, hasn't stopped us from being in perpetual wars ever since. But that is still a point that should be remembered. Keith and I were laughing about it during the break, that it seems to be only us and Ron Paul that ever make mention of that, and Mark Weber. And by the way, support Mark's work at IHR.org. Mark Weber, our featured guest this hour, the director of the Institute of Historical Review, for a long, long time, longer than us. He's been doing great work at IHR.org. So a couple of things, Mark, you mentioned in that last segment that I wanted to touch on very quickly, and then we'll let Keith repose the question he asked right before the break. But you're right in that there is no support for another American military action in the Middle East, anywhere in the world, including America. Now, that just goes to show a lot has changed since the Bush era, when they could whip up a little bit of faux patriotic frenzy to get us into another conflict. But Pat Buchanan has dedicated at least his last two columns to this, and he amplified and echoed a lot that you were saying in the previous segment, Mark, about how just how unpopular the idea is here, even in America, to go to war in Iran or against Iran. So let's talk about that rhetoric. Is there going to be any bite to it? Could we actually see a boots on the ground type of situation there, or an increase in bombings or whatever else they do?
You know, Trump is in a difficult situation because he made a big point of his campaign for presidency in 2016 precisely
yes.
on the idea, precisely emphasizing that the Democrats and even Bush, even Republicans, had screwed up by getting us involved in pointless wars that turned out to be fiascos, that turned out to be disasters. And Trump promised as a candidate that he was going to pull the troops out of Afghanistan. He went back on that promise. The United States first sent troops into Syria, by the way, illegal, under Barack Obama. And Trump was critical of Obama's policy in Syria. But under Trump, American troops have stayed in Syria, by the way, completely illegal. But the predictions by the Obama administration that the United States and others are going to be able to bring down the government in Syria have proven completely wrong. Long after Obama's out of the White House, Bashar al-Assad is still in the presidential palace in Damascus. And by the same token, Trump's pledges or predictions that he was going to force Iran back to the negotiating table have also failed, despite all the huffing and puffing that's going on. Now, having said that, Trump may be make mistakes, but he's not suicidal, and he knows that a major war would be catastrophic just for his chances getting reelected next year in the presidential campaign. There's not only one of the reasons there's no support among Americans for a war is Trump himself has been vociferously critical of U.S. involvement in these pointless wars. And so it's very hard for him, especially, to keep faith with his own base of support by launching the United States into another conflict in the Middle East in which no real American interest is at stake.
All right, let's follow up on that. I know Keith has a great question for you, and we want to get to it. But just to tie this up very quickly, you're right that Trump, I think that was one of the biggest things that he had going in his favor as candidate Trump. And, of course, there's a night and day difference between candidate Trump and President Trump. But I think short of his position on the border, which, of course, hasn't been realized either, but it was his America First non-interventionist policies with regards to these foreign entanglements that really propelled him to the head of the pack.
Well, let me say this too. You know, he's not the first Republican president that has wanted to pull back, at least in his campaign rhetoric. I remember when George W. Bush said he was thinking we need to have a humbler, gentler foreign policy towards the Middle East. And then once he got in office, the neocons started making him read as required reading every night, Natan Sharansky. And things like that. So, and then he, you know, it was a matter of when all is said and done, more is said than done. Who are these people that are pushing our presidents into military engagements in the Middle East that they are instinctively opposed to, Bush and Trump?
Well, the major factor in U.S. policy in the Middle East, as a former U.S. ambassador to Israel made very explicit several years ago, is U.S. Interest with Israel. And that's a reflection not of any authentic American interest, but of the tremendous power that the Jewish lobby or the organized Jewish community has here in the United States. Candidates know very well that if they defy this power, they will not get reelected or they'll be driven out of office. It's not that American politicians care much really about Israel. What they care about is getting reelected, and they care about their own political futures. And to defy that power in the United States is, as all politicians of any higher level know, a political suicide. That's what they're really afraid of. And that's a very unfortunate thing. It means putting the interests for politicians, it means putting their own personal interest or their partisan interest or their party interest above the interest of the American people or of humanity. And that's a very, very sorry situation. But anyway, that's what's essentially driving U.S. policy, as American politicians have said over and over. Biden even blurted out and said several years ago in a speech that no group in America has had more influence on America's cultural life over the last two centuries, he said, than the American Jewish community. And they're all beholden to that power, and it's manifest every time an Israeli prime minister speaks in Washington. He gets applauded far more vigorously than the politicians in Congress applaud our own president or the leaders of their own country. That's a very sorry situation, and it is an expression of a kind of entrenched, you might say, corruption in American political life. So that's not as
well. I think if Trump was sincere in his position when he was a candidate, he found out not too long after assuming the White House that how much control over
the facts
country,
of life, just like George Bush did,
how much control the president actually has over his own affairs. But you know, it's interesting when you try to read the tea leaves in these things, and you thought, well, Bolton being gone, that could possibly be a good thing, and then we found out Trump tweeted that, well, Bolton actually held me back with regards to what I really wanted to do in Venezuela and some of these other locations.
And Robert O'Brien, his replacement, said, spoke very glowingly of John Bolton, said that he was often the smartest man in the
room.
Yeah,
okay, let's circle back to Bolton. Thank you, Keith, for mentioning that. If we could, to Bolton, or not Bolton, rather, but to O'Brien, who I think O'Brien had a hand in Trump's historic diplomatic effort to free the rapper ASAP Rocky, and that's A dollar sign AP, ASAP
well,
Rocky.
What an accomplishment.
So I think O'Brien had a hand in that. But what do we know about this guy, Mark? Anything?
I don't pay much attention to O'Brien. I'm not very impressed by who Trump picks, because time and time again, he picks somebody who seems good or not good or whatever, and he praises them. And a few months later, he's out. And Trump says, the first Secretary of State he had, Tillerson. He didn't want to be Secretary of State, but Trump begged him. He was a former Exxon CEO. Finally, he left. When he left, Trump said, I couldn't get rid of him fast enough. Bolton was praised when he came in. Now he's out, and Trump says, well, we had disagreements, he says, right from the get-go. Who knows? I mean, something's not right if
The only guy that seems to be in there that was in there originally is Rick Perry, you know, as, you know, the head of the Department of Energy. But, you know, you're right, Jeff Sessions, everybody that comes in there comes in, they're begged to come in, and then they are summarily dismissed shortly thereafter.
As we put it, the Trump administration has more turnover than Burger King.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not very intrigued, really, about this or that man, because Trump, his own foreign policy is very difficult to determine. He himself changes it over and over. I mean, just the other week, he said that those who claim that I'm open to negotiations with Iran without preconditions, he called that fake news. Trump said that on two occasions in public. We have video of it. I mean, you don't know what he really believes. Is North Korea really a threat or not a threat? Is the dictator of North Korea a good friend and he writes him, quote-unquote, beautiful letters? Or is he a danger? Who knows? I mean, Trump's...
Well, is there some method to this madness, Mark? Is it the clean break memorandum, you know, that came out of the Clinton State Department, Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Perle, and others, about regime change in the Middle East? Is this about regime change in Iran, or is there something else?
Keith, you've got such a great knack for asking these questions right as the music begins. Hold on there one more time, Mark. We have, this hour's going by quickly. We have one more segment with Mark Weber, IHR.org. Go there in the commercial break. Check it out. We'll be right back. One more segment with its director, Mark Weber, talking about Iran.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues that affect the American West, its people, lifestyles, lands, and wildlife. The Loving Liberty Radio Network is proud to support efforts to provide an active forum for solutions that will preserve the vanishing resource of the American cowboy. Each issue contains informative articles on life in the American West, along with breathtaking imagery that celebrates our history, as well as the culture of the cowboy spirit in our day. Range Magazine also features great gift ideas, like the 2020 Real Buckaroo Calendar and the book Tales from Out There. You can order online from rangemagazine.com. Just click on the shopping cart. The Loving Liberty Radio Network salutes the spirit of the American West and those who are keeping it alive at Range Magazine.
I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
The press has created a rigged system. They even want to try and rig the election.
Well, I tell you what, it helps in Ohio that we got Democrats in charge of the machines.
And poisoned the mind of so many of our voters.
At the polling booths, where so many cities are corrupt and voter fraud is all too common. And then they say, oh, there's no voter fraud in our country.
I come from Chicago. So I want to be honest. It's not as if it's just Republicans who have monkeyed around with elections in the past. Sometimes Democrats have too. You know, whenever people are in power, they're, you know, they have this tendency to try to, you know, tilt things in their direction.
There's no voter fraud.
You start whining before the game's even over. Whenever things are going badly for you and you lose, you start blaming somebody else, and you don't have what it takes to be in this job.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused Border Agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, four grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved four checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text FIGHT to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. Defendapatriot.com.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
I said it in the opening segment tonight, what a privilege it is to be able to use this venue to bring to you men who should be sitting on panels on national news talk shows every week. And
Mark Weber would be the perfect replacement to John Bolton.
Hey, you know, that is honestly the truth. And now Mark's a friend of mine, and he's been a longtime friend of mine. But this isn't blowing smoke. I mean, truly, people like what you've been listening to this evening should have positions of authority in a presidential administration. And we've got a couple of more coming up tonight. Roger Devlin in the second hour going to be talking to us about the devil term, as he puts it, invented to dispossess Americans. And then in the third hour, back for the second consecutive week, in fact.
And Paul, you know, Fron, what we were talking about, too, during the break is that Trump apparently finds something lacking in so many of his appointments, but he doesn't seem to understand why. He is inalterably opposed to the deep state, wants to flush out the deep state, but he doesn't seem to see the inconsistency of continuing to go to the deep state for candidates for these positions in his government.
Much, you know, quite the opposite of draining the swamp. He continues to populate his administration with swamp monsters. But enough about that. Let's get back to Mark. Mark, I know when you ask questions like this, prediction-type questions, you just set the guest up to fail, but if you could look into your oracle and tell us, as we continue to have you on to help us make sense of the situation in the Middle East as it stands today, where are we going? I mean, we're going to see more sanctions, a drone, or they sink a tugboat. And does it, two-part question, what's going to happen? And could it escalate to an actual boots-on-the-ground war? I know we touched on that earlier. And does the Israeli presidential the elections they've had over there, does that change anything in one way or another?
I think that Trump, it's very clear from a lot of different reports, including Trump himself, that he came very close to attacking Iran when a U.S. drone was shot down in the Persian Gulf. The Iranians say it was in their waters. We said it was in international waters. Apparently it was in both. And Bolton was in favor of going to war and attacking Iran. I guess Pompeo was. And Trump decided at the last minute, he said just with minutes to spare, he decided to not do that. And I think that
was Tucker Carlson, I think, more than anything else, calling in at the last minute that steered him off of that.
Right. That could very well be, because he was appealing to Trump's own instinct to survival, the realization that this was going to be ruinous even for him politically, personally, if he did this. And I think that that was a key moment. And I very strongly think there will not be at this point or in rest of the Trump administration, whether it's 1 year or 4 years, he will go to war, because it's ridiculous. I mean, it's a contrary to his own instincts. It's contrary to what the American people want. So my prediction is that because he has backed away, he's going to avoid a full scale war. What does this mean? It means at some point he's going to essentially have to back down from his campaign to try to force Iran to bend to his will, in the same way that Obama and Trump were unable to get the government of Syria to back down to their will. Because however strong or weak Iran or Syria are, they have important allies. China has just announced it's increasing its investment in Iran. Russia is increasing its ties with Iran. And Iran is able to strike back, as it's shown, at least the Houthi rebels, or Iran, it's still debated, it's able to strike back and cause damage. And Trump doesn't want that. Nobody wants that. They don't want war in the Middle East. So my prediction is that Trump is going to go back and forth, make a lot of rhetoric, make a lot of threats, but it's not really going to change. The important thing, I think, for Americans is to keep in mind the larger picture. There was a very good article by Clyde Wilson just a few months ago. I put it on our website. And he's, as you know, a Southern patriot. He emphasized again how Southerners are over and over betrayed by their leaders, who use their idealism and their readiness to sacrifice to get the Southerners to support wars that are really contrary to our interest and are wrong. And it was a very perceptive piece, I thought, by Clyde Wilson in that regard. And I think
there's also something that I see in this Mark, which is, it seems that we know who is against our intervention. China, Russia, the rest of the world, except for the state of Israel. But, you know, the silence is deafening when it comes to the state of Israel joining into these military operations. They sit back and don't do a thing. What's going on with that?
They want Americans to pay the price for their wars. They don't want to pay a price themselves. That's a really, again, a very sorry, sad situation for America. The Saudi Arabia also doesn't have the ability to really fight a war. They want America to do the fighting for them. This is a very, very sad situation for Americans. But anyway, that's apart from that. But the prediction is what's going to happen. And because Trump isn't a man with an overreaching worldview. He has feelings. He has sentiments. He doesn't have a coherent plan or idea about these things. And that's shown by the appointments he makes, by the mercurial and shifting trajectory of his policies over the years. He's like a lot of people. He has kind of sentiments. He has feelings. He has a kind of idea of what America should be like, but he doesn't have a really comprehensive worldview. And he's a civic nationalist. He wants America to be good, but he's not even sure exactly, I think, very clearly what he means by America, except in a kind of vague way. But anyway, that's one of the reasons why America's policies have been drifting and why American politicians are able to be bent to the will of Israel or special interests like that.
You know, in that way, he's not very different from George W. Bush, who likewise was not a deep thinker who had charted out a policy on this, but his instincts are subverted. It's like he's a cow with a ring in his nose, and he's being led along both of these presidents.
Well, he certainly may have decent instincts, but especially in the case of Trump, I don't think they are deep-rooted or entrenched enough to make them
or well thought out enough.
Right, invariable.
Yeah, we're getting back again about the personality of Trump. Trump is a man whose entire life has been dedicated to one thing: what's good for Donald Trump and his family. He's very concerned about his image. He doesn't want to be remembered as what he calls a loser. He wants to be remembered as a winner. And that is at the base, really, I think, of what drives him, far more than what's the long-term really interest of the country. It's what's for Donald Trump. And that I think, explains a lot.
Mark, we have about 3 or 4 minutes remaining this hour. Another great hour with you, nearly in the books. IHR.org, folks, for the Institute for Historical Review, IHR.org. In an interview like this, I always like to give a guest a moment in the last couple of minutes to make mention of anything they feel as though we've left out that would be of a germane to the topic we've been discussing that you'd like to share with the audience.
Well, I would just, people often say in foreign conflicts, well, which side are you on? Are you on the side of the Israelis or Palestinians or the Saudis or the Iranians or something? You know, there's nothing written in the book of fate that says we've got to take sides in these things. These are not our conflicts. And by the same token, even here in the United States, I step back even from a lot of the partisan battle that goes on. I don't feel obliged to say, well, I've got to support this candidate or that candidate or whatever, because there's some real, I think, serious defects in anyone who rises in the American political system. And because we have a system that's really very, very sick and non-functional. That's a very serious thing. And I try to keep that in mind. It's very hard to keep clarity when we live in a society, in the media, in our political life, which is characterized by so much misinformation about very basic premises of life and of history and so forth. And no country right
now. Well, Mark, it's like this, too. You know, we don't rely on Iranian oil. We don't rely on Saudi Arabian oil in America.
That's right.
And what is what does Israel provide us besides bagels? I'm trying to.
Right. People, you'll hear politicians say Israel's security is essential to the national interest. That's just crazy. If Israel didn't even exist until 1948, the United States somehow managed to crank along for more than a century or two centuries without Israel. If Israel,
yeah, well, actually, though, this is a profound question. What actually do they do in return for our investment into their nation? I mean, what exactly are we getting in return from our greatest ally? What are they doing for us
besides being involved in war?
It's completely one-sided. Israel requires American support. Israel is not able to support itself without massive continuing support from outside. It's not a normal country in that way. It's a very artificial society in that way. And and that's why it's long-term prospects are minimum. But anyway, you know, America's interest, I mean, whether you like it or not, is far more tied up with how things go in Mexico or Canada or Britain or even Argentina or Japan than by Israel. Israel has a population of 8 million. I mean, that's less than half the population of California. I mean, it doesn't matter, really. I mean, it matters, of course. I don't want to downplay it either. But
no, I mean, I know what you mean.
Our relationship with Israel and with almost every country in the world should be an even-handed one. And again, I go back to the wisdom of those people who guided American policy for the first century and a half, at least, of American history, who understood all of this and who put those interests first. But
Thomas Jefferson said one time, very, I think, on point, that America wants friendship and honest commerce with all nations, special relationships with none.
And we'll let that be the final word. Another fantastic hour with a fantastic guest and friend, Mark Weber, IHR.org. Mark, thank you so much for coming on and spending a little bit
of your
Saturday with us. As always,
another
we'll be back with Roger Devlin.
The cesspool is in the can, but don't go away. There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.